And welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm your host today, Joe Telestis. Coming up later on the show, the connection between pheasants, farms, bees, and monarch butterflies in South Dakota. We'll talk about the a pollinator habitat with Pete Berthelsen of Pheasants Forever. And then later on in the hour, a live interview with World War II British RAF pilot John Wilkinson, who lives in Spearfish. He is speaking this Saturday at the Black Hills Veterans Writing Group in Rapid City, and what a story he has to tell. First, though, on Wednesday, it is time for the Dakota Political Junkies, and we're joined this week first by John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. Hi, John.
Hi, Joe.
It's been a while since we talked. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, glad to have you.
Also with us, Roger Whittle, managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I thought I'd start today, since now the school year is nearly universally underway. It's been underway for a lot of people for quite a while, but, you know, everybody seems to be back in class now. But I got to tell you, it's kind of fortuitous that we're talking today with John, you in Madison, and Roger in Watertown, because if there are two post-secondary schools that I hear the most about, in addition to Mitchell, it is your two, Dakota State and Madison. From what I see and what I hear, it seems to be just a nonstop engine producing an ever-growing number and variety of tech-forward graduates, and hardly a week goes by without running into someone who mentions the progressive nature of what's going on at Lake Area Tech. John, why don't we start with you? Your communities are similar in that you're of a similar size and have this impact of those schools there. Tell us what you've been in Madison a long time. Tell us about the impact of Dakota State University and what's really changed there over the last few years, and what's the vibe going into the brand new school year?
Well, it's an extraordinary story from all angles. The university has had a kind of 130 some year history, but with two or three different missions along the way. And the big change in 1984, when the mission changed from primarily teacher education to a technology-centric, still a broad-based education, was, seemingly turning a freighter right in the middle of a bay. And it suffered a little while then. But this IT, the information technology focus, originally was to help support the new Citibank kinds of things in Sioux Falls. And remember, the usury laws were changed and brought these new banking companies to Sioux Falls. Well, they needed IT people to help, and that's what it was for. And then, of course, it morphed over the years. And then, Joe, certainly in the last decade, when the term was even invented, cybersecurity, that now is the latest trend here, and it's a rocket that's taking off harder and faster than any rocket that we've had before. So you're right. This year we'll show record on campus enrollment. The dorms are all full. Of course, they've been full at times, but they're building new ones, and these kids are all kids, young adults or even middle-aged adults, are all going and getting terrific jobs. Many with companies and the government and so forth. So it's just an amazing time at Dakota State.
How has it changed the community? And maybe start with from an economic standpoint.
If you look at the last 15 years, say, when the concept of distance education came into play, Dakota State, of course, being in IT, was a little bit at the head of that, where people could take classes online or at least work with these kind of online situations. So what we saw was the rapid growth of enrollment was coming from the online segment. So the on-campus enrollment essentially kind of plateaued. And so you'd see all this growth, but it was all coming from students who might be in Pakistan or Korea or Mitchell or Rapid City or wherever they were. And that also includes the satellite center, like in Sioux Falls. But what we're seeing recently with this, with the cybersecurity, is that there's a stress for on-campus enrollment again, and that's generally traditional freshmen, kind of 18 years old. And I think our community kind of feels that in a positive way. There are more students and more economic activity, and more housing needed and all the kind of good things that come from a higher education institution.
Has it had an impact culturally?
Yeah, I would say so. Interestingly, I mean, this wouldn't surprise anyone. I think, you know, IT majors are, you know, people who are really drawn to that field are not the liberal arts, so they don't study Shakespeare and quote those kinds of things. So they tend to be very technology-focused, and I'm not going to call them any name because that would be unfair, but if you talk about kind of computer nerds, I mean, I don't think that's offensive to anyone. In fact, we may all work for them someday, right?
if we're not already, yeah.
So I think they're, you know, a little bit of that, and less maybe from 50 years ago where you'd have liberal arts, more kind of music, theater, drama, English, history, all those kinds of things. So, but you know, the students are terrific. We have very, very few troubles with any students. They're all great, and we love having them here. It's a fun fall to be in Madison.
Roger Whittle, in Watertown, you have Lake Area Tech, and if there's a couple of words that I hear over and over again are job ready and nimbleness, or the word nimble. That is an organization that really seems to be able to turn on a dime. What are your impressions of the effect of Lake Area Tech, its growth, its changes, and where it sits now in 2015?
Well, you're right about the nimble part. The school has developed close business relationships with area companies that the companies that hire their workers, and they're able to train these guys to do specific things that these companies are hiring for. And I think it's always been a good school since it's open, but I think in the last 5 or 10 years, its profile has just exploded, even on a national scene. I know. We had a president named Deb Shepard, who just retired last year, who I think was responsible for bringing the school to that next level, and now Mike Cartney has taken over, and he's been tasked with continuing that trajectory. They always tout the close business relationships, that they are able to plan a class, have it, and have that first set of graduates out in 2 years, which they attribute to the fact that the school is controlled locally. It's not like a SDSU or USD that is controlled by the Board of Regents. Our local school board, the same board that handles our high school and middle school and grade schools, it has ultimate control over what LATI does.
Roger, also Watertown has a new middle school opening this fall, is that right?
We do. We just opened it last week. Beautiful new school. It's up in the same neighborhood as Lake Area Tech, in fact. Many years ago when the school is looking to expand, build a new high school back before my time, they purchased a bunch of land in the northeast part of town. And at the time, people were saying that, why in the world would you ever need that much land? Well, now their LATI has been expanding so fast, they're kind of landlocked. And now we've got a brand new middle school out there. They built a new transportation hub for the school system out there. And, of course, the high school keeps expanding, too. So good things happening in our education system here.
Roger, when we were talking over topics for today, you brought up the topic of air service, and which I always find is interesting because air service, especially here in flyover country, is often very, you know, very critical. What's going on?
Well, we're dependent on the federal Essential Air Service program, where the government will pay airline subsidies to provide service. And we've been getting service lately from a company called Great Lakes Aviation. It's not the big Great Lakes. It was originally formed for the Great Lakes of Iowa. It's now headquartered in Cheyenne, Wyoming. But they were providing service. And the problem in this commuter air field is a few years ago there was a commuter plane crash somewhere in the country, and Congress responded by increasing the number of hours that pilots needed to fly, because apparently the pilot in that particular crash wasn't very experienced. Well, unbeknownst to Congress, what that did was took away a lot of pilots from these smaller commuter airlines, and the shortage has caused Great Lakes to cancel, you know, sometimes half their flights coming into Watertown. I think for the past 2 years, they fly about 66% of the flights that are scheduled. And the problem there is that once a third of your flights are going to be canceled, nobody bothers even booking flights out of Watertown. They will drive the 100 miles just to the Sioux Falls Airport. And so, of course, this caused the city to start complaining first to the airline, and there's nothing really the airline could do, so the city started complaining to the Federal Department of Transportation, who started putting pressure on the airline to either come up with a plan to provide your decent service or be gone. Well, now the airline, as of September 30th, will no longer be serving our airport, and everybody's scrambling to find another provider, but it looks like Watertown will spend at least a little bit of time without air service after the end of the month.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's conventional wisdom, such as it is, would seem to think that air flight would be limited because of limited demand. But what I'm hearing from you is it's really a limited supply of pilots.
That is the case here. Our boardings were very healthy 5 years ago. But as the level of service deteriorated, the number of customers went away with it. It's definitely not a matter of not enough passengers. It's a matter of not enough planes flying out, causing the passengers to go elsewhere.
Let's change our focus a little bit and head to Pierre, where the saga of Hilger's Gulch, which almost sounds like a flattened Scruggs bluegrass song, it continues. It's an issue, if listeners aren't familiar, where Hilger's Gulch, which is the golf course-like expanse of manicured grass surrounding the state capitol building in Pierre, is costing taxpayers about $50,000 a year to keep irrigated and maintained. And the governor has proposed replacing that man-made oasis with native plants and grasses, et cetera, and again, hopefully saving that $50,000, which I think is called, is it xeriscaping? I think is the word that's used for using native plants. Now, one can argue the aesthetics of what goes on, and one can argue the budget, but what amazed me is that there's over 1,000 citizens organized to oppose the plan. And I was thinking, when was the last time that you had 1,000 people rallying in a town the size of Pierre for anything? And just whatever strikes me about it is that with all the things that any city of that size, and Pierre is unique, again, because it's the state capital, and I guess all of us have skin in that game. I'm always wondering about, you know, how a community can rally around grass, but maybe not rally around things that would seemingly have a larger impact, education, economic development, and what have you. I don't know if there's anywhere to go with that, but I mean, when was the last time 1,000 people rallied for any particular thing in Madison or Watertown?
Well, Joe, I think you have a good point, but as I thought about it a little bit, I mean, you hinted about it a day or two ago, So I got to thinking a little bit about it, and I came up with two ideas. One, it's a location, and so it's actually the location event that is being disputed. If you say we want more funding to education, where do you do that? That affects all counties, all school districts, everywhere. I mean, so you might have 10 people protest in 100 different locations that would get 1,000 people, but so I think part of it is location too, and second, I think it's in one sense it's a one-time deal. If this proposal is made and it's going to go in place, there's kind of this limited time that rallies. Again, if you look at something like education funding or economic development, that's been a 130-year challenge for the state. It'll be for the next 130 years. There's no kind of catalyst that actually drives that. So, you know, I've said before on this program that I like kind of physical protests where people get out and say things and hold signs and those kinds of things. You know, they're nonviolent, obviously, but rather than some kind of Facebook campaign where everyone like something or whatever. I like this situation, and I would expect it'll probably be resolved with some compromise somewhere. But the people will speak, and change will take place. And I think it's all very healthy.
Roger?
Oh, I agree. I think part of it is this is, when you're talking about government policy, no one's going to get all that fired up about it. But this is taking away the lawn that people bring their kids to play on. So it's something they could really relate to. And it apparently worked. We just got a press release about less than an hour ago, saying that the new plan is to keep the grass, keep it mowed, and they're just going to plant some native grasses in certain areas of it. But for the most part, all the grassy areas will be left alone, and all the trails will be maintained. So the people have spoken in this, and they've won.
Well, who knew that we would break news on green grass here on Dakota Midday today? We've got a few minutes left. Want to talk a little bit about city government out in Rapid City. And again, you two guys are East River today with on the Junkies. In Rapid City, they are, I guess, the largest city in the state of South Dakota that sticks with the minimum term length of 2 years for council members and for mayor. And there was an editorial in the Rapid City Journal advocating moving to a longer term, and the pluses and minuses of doing that. What are the situations in Watertown? We'll start with you, Roger, and then John and Madison. What are the length of terms there? And as people who have covered city government for a long time, do they have a point?
Well, we have four-year terms here, which I think is pretty normal. And I would think that, I mean, I lived in Rapid City for a few years where they had two-year terms, and it seemed like they were just electing mayors all the time. and I think to be an effective city government person, it takes a little time. When you get elected mayor, it takes a little time to get your legs under you and learn the job and know what you're doing. And I think to expect that to be done in a two-year term is not really feasible. So I think the newspaper is right to call for longer terms. I don't know why they were short terms in the first place.
And John?
3 year terms in Madison for the city council, and we have five commissioners, so including the mayor. So in year A, you'd have the mayor, and then year B, the first two commissioners, or the other two commissioners, and the last two commissioners in year three. So it seems to cycle them through pretty well. We have had a habit, at least in recent years, of reelecting mayors, and part of this, there's been no scandals or reasons necessarily to throw them out. So even though it's a three-year term, it's more like a de facto 6 or 9 years, at least in recent years. But I think that's healthy. I mean, some people, of course, some listeners will remember when the governor was a two-year term. And I can't imagine how you could get anything kind of in place very quickly, especially if you were not a returning governor from a previous term before that in just 2 years. Although at that time there was certainly more power with the legislature compared to today than the executive branch, but I think 2 years, frankly, is probably too short, and 3 or 4 would both be acceptable, I think, in Rapid City.
All right. We're out of time, unfortunately, but good to talk to both of you on the Dakota Political Junkies. Again, thank you to John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader.
Thanks, Joe.
And Roger Whittle, managing editor at the Watertown Public Opinion.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we will switch gears and talk about how pheasants, farms, bees, and monarch butterflies are all connected. That's coming up on Dakota Midday. We'll be back after this.